You're listening to SBS News.
Hi everyone, I'm Ricardo Gonsalves from the SBS Newsroom. This is SBS On The Money for this Thursday, the 22nd of October 2020. Later, we'll take a look at what the International Monetary Fund is worried about when it comes to the Australian economy, and we take a deep dive into the world of initial public offerings with around 20 to come before the end of the year. But first, let's take a look at the Australian share market, which fell today. The S&P ASX 200 down by 0.3% to 6,173. Weakness in the banks offset the miners. And we saw the likes of Crown, Westpac, Zip, and new market entrant mydeal.com.au all making news. I spoke about all of those stocks and more with Henry Jennings from Market Today. Henry, the market is down today, but it's up from its lows from early morning. Why?
Obviously, we were taking our cue from the European markets and that second wave of COVID cases that we've seen spreading across Europe and to some extent the US as well. So I was quite surprised, but it has been a good comeback today, a good fight back from the market all the way round. And I guess what's really beneath all this is that we've seen some pretty positive comments coming out from AGMs. And we've also seen some good quarterlies from a few people. So that's really the basis and the bedrock of the market at the moment, is that the companies themselves, certainly we're not seeing quite the same level of attrition and pessimism that we saw maybe 3 or 4 months ago, as we've learned to live with COVID, I guess, to some extent.
Speaking of AGMs, we saw Crown today and shareholders deliver the company a first strike against its remuneration report. What's your take?
Well, yes, I mean, it was hardly a big surprise, I guess, that they were going to get a rap across the knuckles from shareholders. There's been lots of mea culpas this week from the chairman, the CEO, etc., on Crown having faced this New South Wales gaming inquiry and the revelations that have come from that. I guess at heart of it is it's going to be board renewal, and it's going to be better kind of compliance. And so improving systems, better structures, better compliance, better reporting to AUSTRAC, and I think a less of a focus on that VIP whale business opportunity that they've obviously grasped over the years will ensure that they can open that Sydney casino in December as planned.
Can we talk about buy now, pay later? Because we saw Westpac sell its entire stake in Zip. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it was all a bit head-scratchy the other day when we saw Westpac come out and announce they had done a deal with Afterpay, which, of course, is the big daddy in the sector. And we were all scratching our heads thinking, well, why didn't they do the deal with Zip? Because they own 11% of Zip. And, of course, the question was then answered a day or so later with Westpac selling down their Zip holding at $6.65. I think it was around 55 million shares there. So they've done pretty well out of it, Westpac. I think they invested $40 million and got back around $360 million, so it's been a pretty good investment. But I have to say, it's a little worrying when you see a bank like Westpac taking the money and run, especially when they're talking about balance sheet and the better uses of the money. You would think that a tie-up with Zip would have been well and truly on the cards, and as a big shareholder there, they've already got a foot in the door and would be able to be certainly, you know, at the table at the cutting edge of that buy now, pay later sector. So it was a little bit concerning. All the questions now are answered, and Westpac has obviously put its back to the horse that is Afterpay as opposed to Zip, which does leave a few question marks, I guess, over Zip as number two in the sector.
Henry, an emerging trend that we've been talking about over the past few days now is IPOs, right? We saw a new one today, MyDeal, really catapulting onto the share market today. There's quite a few coming on at the back end of the year. Yesterday, we heard that Guzman and Gomez might list. Today, some news on Booktopia potentially coming on board too. Is it the right time for these companies to be listing on the share market? Why are they doing it? And what do investors need to know?
Well, it looks like it's a very good time to be IPOing at the moment. We've also got the world's biggest IPO in Ant Group, of course, in Asia too. There did seem to be a bit of a vacuum in the ASX pipeline in terms of those IPOs coming, and that was probably no bad thing given COVID and the uncertainty. But now there's been a bit of a rush, and of course, everyone tries to rush to get in before Christmas as well, and it's a bit of a long lead to it. And it is a sign that the market is healthy, but I guess you have to be a little bit careful. A lot of these new companies coming to market have huge gaps in terms of revenue some of the time, and retail investors are getting very carried away. And of course, you see one being very successful. Doe has been very successful and very, very volatile. We've seen MyDeal today doubling. There's been a number of others that have doubled on listing. So there is a bit of a FOMO going on with retail investors. Of course, the really hard thing to do is to get hold of the floats. And typically, it's easy to get hold of the floats that aren't going to fly, and it's very hard to get hold of the floats that are going to fly. So sometimes you see residual buying from investors that only got 10, 20, 30% of what they asked for power the market afterwards, and that way they get their average price and they get a meaningful holding rather than just having a small holding. But certainly the retail investor is very much to the fore in this, and we've seen that, you know, the Robin Hood effect, I guess, in our market, very much to the fore in IPO investing, that's for sure.
Henry Jennings there from Marcus Today. Let's move now to our feature interview, and it's with Harold Finger. He is the International Monetary Fund Divisional Chief of Australia. Now, the IMF has actually downgraded its forecasts for Asian economic growth to negative 2.2% for 2020. That is the lowest outcome in living memory for the IMF, but then it expects a pretty dramatic pickup to 6.9%. When it comes to Australia, it sees the economy contracting by 4.2% this year and then expanding by 3% next. So it's kind of in line with what it sees for the advanced Asian economies, with economic growth of negative 4% in 2020 and then an expansion of 2.8% for 2021 for those advanced Asian economies. So what does the IMF think about those economies, especially Australia, and what are its concerns? I spoke about all of that with Harold Finger. He joined me from Washington, D.C.
Harold, the IMF has downgraded its 2020 GDP forecast for the whole Asian region to negative 2.2%. That's the worst ever. Why?
So thanks, Ricardo, for having me. I would say the economic impact of the pandemic on Asia, as elsewhere, has been large and damaging, and that is the main driver of the large negative growth we're projecting for 2020. The recession that we're projecting for this year is slightly deeper than we saw in our projections last June. And that reflects a sharper than expected decline in activity, particularly in some key emerging markets such as India, but also Malaysia and the Philippines. By contrast, growth in the region's advanced economies has been slightly revised up, reflecting a faster pickup in activity following earlier exit from lockdowns. But let me also stress, Ricardo, that the uncertainty surrounding the baseline projection is very, very large. We don't know what the virus will do, and we don't know how quickly the health response can get underway that puts this firmly behind us.
I guess you've also said that there will be a drawn-out recovery and that the scars will be deep. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
The crisis and the increase in uncertainty are having a significant and long-lasting impact on investment. And thus on the accumulation of physical capital, which is so important for medium-term growth. Employment is also taking a substantial hit. And of course, some of that is cyclical, given that it's a short-term recession that hopefully we will begin to recover from very soon. But part of it is also longer-lasting. We've seen labor force participation declining across the region, and more so than in some other recessions.
How does Australia compare to all of its neighbours?
So growth in Australia is projected at minus 4.2%. That is better than the average for advanced economies across the globe, which is minus 5.8% in our projection. Australia's June quarter GDP, as we know, fell by 7% quarter on quarter on the lockdown measures, and that was unprecedented by Australia's standards and Australia's history. But it was also much less pronounced than in many other advanced economies in the world, which have seen a much sharper decline in the second quarter. And that is partly the result of the different nature of the lockdown measures in Australia, which were less restrictive and that allowed certain sectors such as mining, such as manufacturing, such as construction to continue operating through the lockdown. And with that and with decisive policy stimulus, the authorities managed to mitigate the impact of the crisis, and they were supported also by continued demand from China for Australia's commodities.
And what are the risks to recovery, especially in Australia, and how do those risks compare to other nations around the region?
So regionally and globally, the uncertainty surrounding the baseline is unusually large. There's significant uncertainty about the trajectory of the pandemic, about the availability and effectiveness of vaccines. And let me also stress that there are geopolitical tensions in the background burning that could pose risks to our baseline projection. Looking at Australia, the financial system is resilient as Australian banks are adequately capitalized and well-positioned to withstand the crisis amid substantial risks, of course. Nonetheless, just if you look at the magnitude of the crisis, of course, there's a need to continue monitoring developments quite closely, given what we are expecting also for scarring in the economy, as we discussed. Household debt is high in Australia at about 185% of disposable income and quite high in international comparison. And there is a risk in principle that falling real estate values, bank credit, and economic activity could reinforce one another into a feedback loop with quite damaging effects on the economy. But so far, I would say the majority of borrowers have sufficient buffers and made enough prepayments to service their loans. The government support is providing significant relief to households, as also do the repayment deferrals offered by banks and the early the possibility for early withdrawals from superannuation accounts. And housing prices, of course, so far have only fallen by a small amount.
Harold Finger there talking about his GDP predictions with the IMF, of course, joining me earlier from Washington, D.C. That is On the Money for this Thursday, the 22nd of October, 2020. I'm Ricardo Gonsalves. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Business Ricardo.
This On the Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It's not personal advice and it doesn't consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.